This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiyis Wahib in Washington. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
A court in Senegal has found former Chadian President Issa Aubrey guilty of crimes against humanity, war crimes, and torture, and sentenced him to life in prison. Rights groups are hailing the landmark verdict as a strong warning to leaders who brutalize their citizens.
That's VOA's Anne Look reporting from Dakar. Details next. Also, a new study says many refugees lack access to needed surgery. And the World Health Organization's Regional Director for Africa says West Africa is better prepared to tackle future outbreaks of Ebola. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, a court in Senegal has found former Chadian President Hissène Habré guilty of crimes against humanity, war crimes and torture, and sentenced him to life in prison. Rights groups are hailing the landmark verdict as a strong warning to leaders who brutalize their citizens. VOA's Anne Look has the story from Dakar with reporting by Alpha Jallo.
Guilty. That was the verdict announced by head judge Gilberto Gustave Kam of Burkina Faso.
Le verdict. Issa Aubrey. La chambre vous déclare coupable.
The court found Aubrey to have been directly involved in ordering detentions, executions, systematic torture, and other abuses against people identified as opponents of his regime. Judge Kam said Aubrey presided over 8 years of uninterrupted repression. Rights groups say Aubrey was responsible for over 40,000 killings.
En application de l'article 10.
During sentencing, Judge Kam said Aubrey created and maintained a system where impunity and terror were law. He was at the head of a regime of generalized suspicion, so paranoid, the judge said, that Aubrey himself turned against his own agents. Victims of Aubrey's regime and relatives of victims in the courtroom Monday wept and cheered after Aubrey was sentenced to life in prison. It is by the grace of God that we won, said one woman. Her husband, a civil servant under Aubrey, was detained and tortured. He died before the trial.
Merci à Dieu, merci à Dieu. Vraiment, les mots.
She says, I cannot find the words. I am very moved. A lion, a man who took himself for God on the earth, has been brought down. Aubrey said nothing. He joined his hands in a fist and waved at supporters as he was escorted from the court. Aubrey had refused to stand or acknowledge the judge throughout the trial, his eyes hidden behind sunglasses, his head and face wrapped in a white scarf. He had to be forcibly brought into the court last June when the trial began. He and his lawyers refused to participate, and the trial was briefly suspended while court-appointed attorneys prepared his defense. Aubrey fled to Senegal in 1990 after he was ousted in a coup. The case against him has been over 20 years in the making. The Extraordinary African Chambers is an African Union tribunal created in 2013 within Senegal's justice system and funded by the international community. Over 4,500 victims were registered as civil parties in the case. Chadian lawyer Jacqueline Mudena is lead counsel for the victims. She says today marks the end of the victims' relentless search for justice. She says it's a great joy for the victims and for Africa because we are sending a strong message to tyrants all over the world. Among those who testified were 69 survivors of detention and abuses, including a woman Aubrey was found guilty of raping 4 times. Aubrey's lawyers have 15 days to appeal the verdict. And look for VOA News, Dakar.
The UN Refugee Agency says there were many boat tragedies last week during operations to rescue migrants and refugees crossing the Mediterranean. The UN Refugee Agency says while about 10,000 people were rescued after leaving from Libya, hundreds died. Reporter Josephine McKenna is following the migrant and refugee story from Rome. She spoke to VOA's Jody Capua about the migrant deaths and last week and other related news.
The UNHCR, the United Nations Refugee Agency, said the deaths from last week's disasters could be as high as 700 when we take account of at least three disasters. And that also includes around 40 children who are believed to have drowned in that crossing from Libya to Italy.
Is this 700 figure an underestimate of what they believe the true death toll is?
Well, it's often very difficult to know because many people may be travelling inside the hull of these broken down fishing trawlers or other boats. They could be trapped inside, as some of the survivors have indicated that there have been people trapped inside that have gone down when these boats have sunk. And so it's quite difficult to know. There is also the possibility of boats leaving the Libyan coast still in Libyan waters. We've had suggestions that some of those have also overturned before they've even come close to being rescued.
Let me ask you about some of the news coming out of the camps and various centers that have been set up for the migrants. Now, what happened along Italy's border with France where a migrant camp is located?
This has been a very difficult issue on the border between Italy and France for some months. In the town of Ventimiglia, this small town on the border, migrants have essentially been trapped there as France tightened controls. And they've been cleared out of this camp this morning and been taken in by a Catholic priest in that town. He's accepted around 70 migrants that police forced out of this camp. And it was ordered for reasons of public hygiene and security, but the Catholic Church has responded, and the local bishop is also calling on other priests in the diocese to follow this example and welcome more migrants who are essentially homeless in that area.
Now, we're also getting news from Palermo, Sicily, that some migrants revolted at a center there. What have you heard?
This morning at the center called Araba Fenice, in Palermo, around 50 migrants essentially barricaded themselves inside the centre, refusing to leave or come in. This protest appears to have been related to complaints that they were getting too little food and not enough medical assistance, not enough showers. This is a great concern because many of these centres are run by small associations and receive some government funding for every migrant that they accept. So if there are concerns that from the migrants themselves that they're not getting the treatment that they should be, then it's a concern that the money is not being well used by those who are running these centres.
Now, of course, Italy has become the prime destination for these migrants and refugees crossing the Mediterranean from North Africa. Have you heard of any reaction from Italian politicians?
The politicians in Italy have been speaking out very strongly. Some have been warning of what they call an invasion. They're using the word invasion. And some of the small town politicians, you know, small town mayors and local leaders across the country are also speaking out because they're concerned that they just don't have enough room to accept this new wave of immigrants that are coming in. There was a new poll released today where one-third of Italians said migrants should be sent back, and around 39% said while some could be welcomed, not all of them could be accepted in Italy. So a very divisive issue for Italy. And just to give you an idea, the town of Arezzo, which is a beautiful tourist town in Tuscany, not far from Florence, said they've got around 1,400 immigrants there at the moment, and the town was supposed to accept around 200.
Is there any news about the arrest of people smugglers? You know, we hear various things that they may hide among the migrants or leave the migrants on their own and sail back to Libya. Has Italy done anything as far as prosecuting them?
We had some arrests last week, and today there was news that the Italian police had detained two men suspected of running one of the migrant vessels that capsized last week causing the deaths of at least 45 people, including a baby and two toddlers. The Navy ship Vega rescued around 629 people from that incident. And when they brought them into shore, the people smugglers, the captains of this particular ship, were identified and turned over to police. Incidentally, on that particular vessel, there were around 420 men and more than 140 women and minors. And they came from countries including Eritrea, Libya, Nigeria, who gather in Libya and often have to wait in terrible conditions in Libya while they're waiting to get across to Italy.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna from Rome. She spoke with VOA's Jody Capua. Progress is reported in negotiations between the European Union and Turkey over allowing Turkish citizens to have visa-free travel. The Associated Press reports the EU wants Turkey to meet 72 conditions before getting the visa waiver. The issue is a major part of a deal that calls on Turkey to restrict the flow of refugees and migrants to Greece. Since March 20th, only small numbers of refugees have left Turkey for the Greek islands. While progress in the talks is reported, one big issue remains unresolved. Turkish President Erdogan has refused an EU demand to soften the definition of a terrorist to protect journalists and political dissidents. Also, the French news agency reports Hungary is reinforcing its border fence with Serbia. More migrant and refugees have arrived at the Hungarian border following the closure of a large makeshift refugee camp in Greece last week. Most of those in the camp at Idomeni were relocated to newer camps in Greece. Elsewhere, there's tension growing between residents and migrants on the French archipelago of Mayotte. The island is located between Madagascar and Mozambique. AFP reports that since January, about 1,000 migrants, mostly from the Comoros Islands, have been expelled from their homes on Mayotte by anti-migrant groups. The police chief there says he plans to crack down on illegal immigration, including an increase in naval patrol. There are about 60 million refugees worldwide, people who fled to other countries due to conflict, persecution, and human rights violations. A new study says such humanitarian crises have created a health emergency that's gotten little attention. VOA's Jody Capua reports.
The study says many refugees need surgery, but it's often neglected in times of crisis. The Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health estimates at least 2.8 million surgeries a year may be needed among the displaced. Study leader Dr. Adam Kushner explains why the need for surgery may get overlooked.
Part of it is that surgery is not really thought of as part of public health or global health. There's been some movements in the last couple of years to kind of bring that forward. And a bunch of us are trying to say there are a lot of things that go into health needs, but there's also a surgical component. This study was really to kind of highlight that.
He says many refugees most likely need basic surgery.
Things like cesarean section, hernia repairs, appendicitis, also fractures and broken bones. We're not talking the complex transplantation or cardiac surgery here. This is the stuff where a child falls from a tree and breaks a leg. They don't get that leg taken care of, they're casted or splinted. They may end up being disabled, treating simple burns, or even a cut that might need stitches.
Even when there's no immediate crisis, Kushner says many in developing countries need surgery.
We've done studies in the past in places like Sierra Leone and Nepal and Rwanda, looking at the baseline needs of the population. For example, in Sierra Leone, before Ebola, 25% of the population indicated they had some sort of surgical need. And that's going to be similar in places like Somalia and probably northern Kenya and parts of Ethiopia. And so then you bring in refugees and displaced people on top of that, it's going to cause a lot of problems.
The World Health Organization estimates 15% of pregnant women will suffer from complications that require surgery, such as protracted labor and ectopic pregnancy. The WHO says the prevalence of pregnancy among displaced women of reproductive age is between 6 and 14%. The study says lack of documentation, high costs, and weak infrastructure also contribute to surgery not being done.
I think a lot of people look at surgery and think, oh, that's really expensive, or it's kind of the elective stuff that's not needed. But if you just look at what are the minimum basic standards, and just think of a child with appendicitis or an adult with a hernia, if you repair that hernia, their intestines won't get stuck in it, they won't die of a bowel problem, they'll be able to work. So there's also the economic benefit of this.
So what can be done?
It is a daunting question. There is a lot of healthcare being given. And so working with governments, with international organizations, groups like MSF, to recognize that there is a surgical burden and that should be addressed when trying to plan and do these interventions. One of the first issues is really to recognize that this is a problem and we should address it.
Dr. Kushner says surgery should go hand in hand with other medical care given to refugees.
What I mean by that is we know that there are a lot of children and women in need, so we need to consider the surgical aspect of pediatric health, of maternal health. There's a lot of effort being done on non-communicable diseases, and so the surgical component of diabetes or cancer, cardiac disease, just adding it as another tool into what's already being done is the way to go about this.
The study was published online May 25th in the World Journal of Surgery. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
You are listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. Twenty-two past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Former Chadian dictator Hissène Habré has been sentenced to life in prison for atrocities committed during his rule. And a new study says many of the world refugees lack access to needed surgery. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. May, hundreds of Nigerians rescued or who've escaped from Boko Haram camps in the Sambisa forest are young girls. Many of them have babies whose fathers are Boko Haram militants. Nigerian reporter Isaac Lyons Abrak has covered the war with Boko Haram for many years and interviewed some of the young mothers who returned to Maiduguri. VOA's David Arnold asked him about the hardships the girls face when they return home.
I believe I've spoken to about four of them, very close interviews. Most of them have issues when they come back home. I give you an example. There is a certain Amina. Amina is from Madagali. She escaped from Boko Haram. When she got back home, sometimes last year, the community people refused her staying back in the village because they felt that the baby she was carrying in her belly, when she gave birth to the baby, Boko Haram would definitely come for their baby. And in the course, they will attack the community and kill everybody in the community. So her parents had to keep her hiding. And at the end of the day, she was moved to one of her relations in another village. Another young girl of about 14 years who returned back home, her own biological mother did not want the girl to stay around her house with the Boko Haram baby. So the little girl, the 13-year-old girl, had to go and abandon her baby in a refuge dump. Older woman found the baby here.
It sounds like a problem that doesn't have a solution.
It is not that it does not have a solution, but a solution has not been provided yet.
What kind of help do they need?
These girls are rescued and they are still in camp. It is at that level that the government would identify them, get them out, and give them some psychological rehabilitation. I try and talk to them and get them and get all this trauma off them. Also include the parents and try to educate the society on how to accept these babies, because these babies are just innocent babies. Like the idea that Boko Haram is going to come back and take away these babies, as far as we can see right now, Boko Haram is on their own. But yet, people are still living in fear.
Has there been any family support of the girls?
I'm in contact with one of the girls who is about 11 years old, and she got pregnant and she was bleeding. When she got back home, the mother took her to various hospitals and she's healed now. When I spoke to her last month, she's about 8 months pregnant. Her mother is catering for her. Some of the girls are lucky to receive family support. But even if her biological father and her biological mother support her, her extended family such as the uncles, the aunties, will not feel very comfortable with having such a girl in the house. So even if they have family support, the extended family normally sounds for them. Generally, these girls are not finding it easy. I have spoken to some of these girls. They are really, really terrified. They are really, really frightened. It would be great with organizations, especially if there are foreign organizations, who can extend a hand of help to these girls, because it is really, really terrible. Some of them still want to go back to school, but yet they have babies to take care of. This is carried out by Boko Haram. They kidnap young girls and get them impregnated so that when these girls give birth to these babies will carry on the war of Boko Haram. These girls and these communities and their parents also live with this fear that Boko Haram will definitely come back someday, chase them someday to take back their babies and indoctrinate them back into their ideology.
That was reporter Isaac Abrak in Abuja. He spoke with VOA's David Arnold. UN humanitarian officials estimate 70,000 people have been displaced by flooding in Beltwen in Somalia's Hiran region. The floods follow heavy rains in the Ethiopian highlands, causing the Shebele River to rise. Officials say about 60% of the town is flooded. Local residents say it's the worst flooding since 1981. There's a warning: the lower part of the Shebele River, especially near Jawhar, could also rise soon. And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports, coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Wagner Roberts, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica at voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Linor Mudu. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
African music mix. Everyone is looking for something special when maybe they should just listen instead. The VOA's African Music Mix will soothe your nerves and calm your head. Tune in from 0 to 300 UTC and 1100 to 1300 hours UTC to make you feel good. So treat yourself to that something special.